I'm Anthony Bachman from All Things Good and Nerdy, a geeky podcast part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other fantastic geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. I'm Chris, and today we have Billy, who sometimes writes for Commander Cast, back to talk about Turok 2 Seeds of Evil. Billy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, sitting here in my bathrobe, podcasting without pants like the dream.
Oh, see, that is the one thing that I think every podcaster does, whether they admit it or not, just not wear pants.
This is my first time not wearing pants on a podcast. It's interesting.
You completely threw me, because I just assumed that people aren't wearing pants when they come on the show.
Well, I'm sorry to ruin your mental image, but some people might be. Also, my old mic had to, like, clip onto my collar, so I had to wear, like, a real shirt, and if I was going to do that, I was probably going to wear actual pants, because I couldn't put the bathrobe on over it.
Fair enough. Well, speaking of things that are just completely crazy, like I said, we're here to talk about Turok today, which is, to put it mildly, completely crazy.
Oh, it's bonkers. It's completely bonkers. So, where do you want to start?
Well, I know you got your hands on a bunch of the newer Dynamite stuff. I'd love to hear what's going on there.
So, what I got from going to my dad and asking him for his... if I could borrow his Turok comics, I was intending to get the Valiant stuff that I grew up on, but that was under too many boxes, so I got the things that were easily accessible, which were two of the more recent Dynamite runs. From what I can tell, Dynamite ended up with the Turok rights sometime around 2017, or at least the earliest of these I have is 2017. It's Chuck Wendig and Alvaro Saraseca. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but it is great. It has nothing to do with either Valiant Turok or any of the Acclaim era Turoks. It's a new Turok in a new take on the Lost Lands, where he is trying to rescue his daughter from Nazi dinosaurs. It is
Wait, like for real? Awesome.
Yes. Yeah, well, they're like the Saurian Nazis. I'll find a picture that you can put up with it. The cover for number one is just him jumping out of a tree on a bunch of, like, dinosaurs that are very clearly holding knockoff MP40s and wearing knockoff SS uniforms. It's great.
Wow. Welcome to comics, everybody.
It's a lot of fun. It's well made. It's five issues, and it's a complete story in five issues. And that seems to be the setup that Dynamite is going with, is they get a creative team, they give them five issues to do whatever the heck they want with the concept of a guy who hunts dinosaurs in a land where time doesn't matter, and then they just cut it there. Get a new creative team and bring them in.
See, in some ways, that's got to be nice knowing that you have five issues to just go crazy and know that that's the time frame you have to get things wrapped up in.
Oh, yeah. And minor spoilers for the comic for anybody who's going to read it. It's pretty apparent later, but this Turok actually in the story takes his name from his daughter's comic books. He starts calling himself Turok when he ends up in the Lost Lands because it's just like his daughter's comic books.
Oh, that's not self-referencing things at all, is it?
it's a little meta, and it seems like there's a bit of that going on in the Dynamite era, but it works for this one, because he's a modern-day 2017 man who ended up getting accidentally into the Lost Lands, not a post-Civil War era Native American man. So it's a little bit different tone going on there, but it's a lot of fun. Like, it's just a great story, Turok or otherwise.
Oh, I love meta things like that anyway, so that's going to be amazing when I can get my hands on it.
Well, and it does it well, which is very nice. It does it well. And then the other run that I got is 2019, and it is Ron Mars and Roberto Castro, and then coloring by Salvatore Ayala, which I think I pronounced better than Sarasika, but who knows. And that one starts off with a much more, I almost said traditional, but at this point the tradition is that everything keeps changing. Beginning much closer to the original Turok comics, where Turok and Ander are, you know, out wandering, in this case being chased by U.S. Army soldiers, and they stumble into the Lost Lands, where there's dinosaurs and, you know, magic and weird alien technology, and they end up having to team up with the army guys to try to survive because there's raptors that are just taking everybody out. And it's okay. For only being a 5-issue series, it seems like not enough happens. But to riff on the meta thing, this comic series has its Turok discovering that he is one of many across all of the realities that converge in the Lost Lands, and then has all of the different Turoks up to this point, including the guy from the first Dynamite run and the Acclaim era Turok, and like a guy who's clearly supposed to be the Valiant one, and probably the guys from the runs in between 2017 and 2019 all end up teaming up to fight the big bad guy on that one. And that was kind of cool, but it felt like it either needed to be a longer story with a little more time to breathe and like leading up into this twist, or it needed to go for the twist earlier, because it kind of wipes away all of the previous couple of issues of Turok and the army trying to survive in Dinosaur Land. And then it's just like, all of a sudden, all the Turoks are here, and they're all gonna punch this guy. And it's like, yeah, I get what you were going for, and I don't know if editorial mandate shoved that into your survival story, or that was the plan from the start, or what, but it seemed like a story that either needed maybe more than 5 issues, or less than 5 issues. But it was all right. Definitely not as good as the Chuck Wendig Nazi dinosaur story. That one is just good old-fashioned Nazi punching fun.
Well, I was able to find a couple of Acclaim ones through methods, we'll just put it that way. And they're pretty fun in themselves. One of the things I like is that at least the versions that I found are just one big old book instead of different issues. So you get everything.
That's nice.
Yeah, you get everything all at once. And they're clearly made to go with the game. Like, one of
them... Yeah, I know in the Acclaim era, they really started basing the comics off of the games more than, building the games around the comics ideas. There's a lot more aliens than usual.
Well, one of them is Turok 2, Aiden's Curse, and... I mean, it straight up tells you on the cover that it has game tips for the game in it.
Oh, that'd be handy, actually.
I didn't get that far into it, because there was another one that was just two Seeds of Evil. So I'm like, okay, cool. I'll find that one. Of course, I found it like 20 minutes before we're set to get started, so I didn't get a chance to look through that one as much.
Time is the enemy of all.
Oh, yeah. In the Acclaim era Turok stuff, you have Joshua Fireseed being Turok, and he's a college student with a roommate who is your typical, like, you're being crazy, I'm going to worry about you kind of college roommate. He's a baseball player, and that gets mentioned, and I don't really see where it becomes relevant besides just to give him another characteristic about himself.
He's vaguely athletic.
I mean, you'd think if they're going to make him a baseball player, it could have him throw things more or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there's not a lot of, like, baseball-sized objects to throw in this game. There is a really cool razor blade frisbee, though.
Oh, man. The razor blade frisbee is a cool thing. But there are so many little alien references. Like, Alien the creature, not Alien the movie. In these Acclaim era comics, so many things that are not just straight up Savage Land ripoffs. Because I can't help but think of the Lost Lands as the Savage Land.
I mean, it technically predates the Savage Land, but it's very much the land that time forgot, sort of Jules Verne style. Yeah, there's dinosaurs, and there's, like, this is mythical monsters, too, and, you know, sometimes aliens. No.
But one of the things I do like about the Acclaim ones is that they're not so super overly violent that you could get a kid who somehow was able to sneak the rating of Turok 2 past his parents, or her parents, I guess, and they could read the comic.
Yeah, I was not allowed to play this game as a kid. So sorry, Mom. I played it now at nearly 30.
I'm not going to tell on you.
She might listen to this.
He's lying. He didn't really play it. One of the things I found looking through these, though, is that for some reason, he's still dressing up in that 1950s Turok costume, and I can't figure out why, unless it's just, here's a recognizable thing, they want to keep using it.
Oh, the like, bone armor breastplate, vaguely jeans,
yeah.
And, like, yeah, that's not the, well, not to be too correcting, that's not the 50s era one, it's very much riffing on the Valiant version of it, though.
Okay, then that's clearly me just mashing memories together from last time I did a Turok game.
It's okay. There's a lot of different Turoks that are all different, but trying to be similar, and it's a thing. It's one of those properties that's changed hands so many times, you don't know which way's up.
Well, on that note of craziness, let's drop some promos for a few other shows, and then we'll come back and talk about the game.
Hey everyone, I'm Danny, over here at the Wheel Weaves podcast, where we're diving into the series, The Wheel of Time. Are you a super fan? Awesome. Never heard of it? No problem. The Wheel of Time is one of the top-selling fantasy series ever, and it was picked up by Amazon to be the next big TV show. Our podcast is safe for first-time readers because it's made by me, a first-time reader. I'm joined by my co-host Brett, a longtime fan who is acting as my tour guide as we journey into the series for chapter analysis, character breakdown, and probably wrong predictions. Find us at the Wheel Weaves podcast on social media and listen in on your favorite podcasting app.
But there is not a day that has gone by since that I do not hear them still, that I do not weep for them, for all of them, for those planets and countless others, and for them, I ignite. I explode against the void. I make myself a shining guiding star for those who feel abandoned in the abyss, for no matter how long my shadow grows, I will not be devoured by the black.
Welcome to Artifacts of Infinity, where we dive into the infinite abyss of Marvel's cosmic universe. I'm Jonathan Hudson.
And I'm Everett Christensen. Artifacts of Infinity is a hybrid continuity explainer podcast. We won't be covering issues in order, but focusing on the aspects of the mainline continuity and foundational stories to help people find Cosmic Marvel more accessible.
We release episodes every other Sunday and feature an image gallery and articles throughout the week on our website. You can find us at artifactsofinfinity.com. We will see you in the infinite cosmos.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So I'm going to be straight up here with this game. I hate first-person shooters. I've never been able to get into them. I've never been able to be good at them once you have to start aiming up and down. So I played a little bit of this one and then watched gameplay videos.
I got about 3 levels in. I didn't make it all the way through the second one. It's a little non-linear, which I guess we'll explain when we get there, but I really enjoyed it. Most of my problems are it's a pre-Halo first-person shooter, so all of my post-Halo muscle memory does not work and is in fact actively to my detriment.
I do actually own this game. I am going to keep it, and maybe I'll get around to fighting my way through it one day. Because just the idea of it is amazing to me.
It's great. It's a lot of fun. It has, I mean, I can see how it won all of those awards back in the day and was, you know, game of the year a million times over. It's got a lot of flaws that are just kind of things that exist because they were still figuring out the genre, and it's got a lot of, the control scheme is pre-Halo, and it's a great control scheme. It's just, I have so much experience. I mean, I've got, you know, 15 years of playing first-person shooters on a console after Halo, so much so that I can't go back. You really can't go home. But I feel like 8-year-old or 7-year-old or whenever this came out, your old Billy would have been better at this than present-day Billy, but maybe not much.
Yeah, because this one came out in 98, published by Acclaim and developed by Iguana, so that would have made me like 11 or 12 when it came out.
Yeah, and that'd put me like smack on 8, so... Yeah, coming in out of GoldenEye, I think I'd have been a little bit better at this, but coming in after Halo, man, the... So, minor video game history lesson here. Before Halo happened and really sort of standardized the controls for first-person shooters on a console, nobody really knew what they were doing. They just kind of muddled through it because it wasn't a mouse and keyboard like you had on the computer where the genre originated. So they figured out all kinds of different solutions and button arrangements, and Turok is really good. Like, it's really, really good. It takes good advantage of the advantages of the weird shape of the N64 controller and its strange button layouts. But the problem is, the main joystick, which you hold in your left hand, is used to control looking. Like, looking up, looking down, looking left, looking right. And then movement is handled by your right hand on the C buttons. And that's great. That is a brilliant idea. It lets you use the analog stick to control the rate at which you angle up and down or turn left and right. You know, you can put the stick all the way over to turn right really quickly so you can turn around and shoot the bad guy, and you can also do it slowly when you're lining up that headshot from a mile away. The downside is, after Halo happened and functionally standardized the control scheme for first-person shooters on consoles forever afterwards, in Halo, your left hand controls movement and your right hand controls looking. So whenever raptors were trying to eat my face and my brain reverted to all of this experience of post-Halo muscle memory, and I started moving where I was trying to look and looking where I was trying to move and getting eaten by dinosaurs. So I might have turned on some cheats to be able to get through this, like unlimited ammo and all the guns. So I could use guns that I was not supposed to have and were, frankly, quite overpowered for these raptors.
Oh, I use those cheats all the time to get through these things.
I really enjoyed it. I figured being able to at least play with all the toys would be better for the review than me getting stuck on the first level for 15 hours.
Yeah, anybody who thinks I go through and beat these games, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I play them on easy, and I cheat. Partly because this isn't how good the game is, it's how much it represents the comic. And I want to be able to see more of the game.
Righto.
From what I can tell, this does a great job of showing off those Acclaim-era comics. You have them looking about as close as you could expect a 3D 64 game to look. I mean, this is still early 3D. They're all going to look like crap. There's just no way around that.
This looks better than I expected it to, honestly. Once it, like, loaded in, you've still got, like, the fog and, you know, everybody, or like all of the shapes are really basic geometry, but the texturing was better than I can think of off the top of my head for the N64 era.
Yeah, if you can get yourself in the right mindset for what you're expecting, this game looks amazing. I mean, if you're coming off of playing Madden 2019, it looks horrible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, nothing really compares to the weirdly uncanny valley photorealism of Madden.
And that's one reason why I'm doing this kind of chronologically, so we can sit here and get things, get that progression going, and not compare NES Batman to Arkham Asylum.
Yeah. I mean, NES Batman is great, but it does not look nearly as shiny.
So just like in the comics, you're playing this one as Joshua Fireseed. From what I saw, there isn't really a big deal made out of that. Which is fine. They don't need to make a huge deal out of it when they have the comics coming out at the same time to tell the story.
Yeah, I think they didn't want to confuse people because everybody in-game just refers to you as Turok.
And even he refers to himself as Turok when he just yells out, "I am Turok."
Oh yeah, he does that whenever you get an extra life.
I am Turok!
That's just a really cool thing in there. Especially because in the comics, he makes a point to tell one of these alien creatures, Aiden, that tells you what you need to do at the beginning of the levels, that he doesn't like being called Turok. Because he feels like, I think the quote from him was, it feels like people are calling him waiter or bus driver.
I guess.
Which, I mean, when you think about it, that's his title, it makes sense, and you know, whatever. You like being called what you like being called. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
And it probably scares all the primogens and dinosaurs running around in there to yell out, "I am Turok," instead of, "I am Joshua Fireseed."
Oh, yeah. I mean, imagine being one of those, like, raptoid grunts, and you just hear this series of increasingly ridiculous explosions, and then
I'm Turok.
You're gonna run.
So the story for this game is that the Chronospectre thing that he threw into a volcano at the end of the first game somehow brings about the Primogen, and they're going around trying to take out the Lost Lands, and Joshua is called by the elders of the Lost Land to come out. So he's coming around and having to rescue children and defeat all the Primogen and make sure that the Talisman Chamber portals take him where he actually needs to go and keep this big giant entity, which we will spoil who it is later, trapped in a lightship so that he can't come out and take over the entire world.
Yep. There's a big bad guy in a box. He wants out of the box. He's got a lot of goons. You have a lot of guns.
I mean, if you've read the Wheel of Time books, it's a lot like those.
But a lot shorter, thankfully.
Yes. Wait, you actually know what those are? That's so cool.
Everybody knows Wheel of Time. Like, I haven't read them because, well, that's like 30 books too many. But I'm aware of them, yeah. I just thought that was common knowledge.
Well, if anybody wants to get into them, go back and listen to the promos again, because there will be a promo for a Good Wheel of Time podcast.
Huh. There you go.
It's a pretty straightforward game as far as what you need to do. Aiden, and it's probably a Dawn or some weird alien pronunciation in reality.
No, I think it's Aiden. She says her name at the beginning of the game. Pretty
okay,
sure
good.
It's Aiden.
So Aiden goes and tells you what you need to do at the beginning of each level, which I really appreciate because there's no guessing on what you need to do.
I for one would only request like subtitles or something during it, which I didn't find an option for because sometimes you don't hear what she says and then you're just lost.
I mean, it is N64 speech. There's only so much they could get in there.
Yeah, it's neat to see it fully voiced on the N64, but it's also cartridge digitized voice, even if it's good cartridge digitized voice.
But as far as running around through the game goes, you can pick up all kinds of crazy weapons. And that happens in the comics. There's all these dinosaur-like creatures. Well, what we understood as dinosaurs back then, anyway. And they're all just running around in the level waiting to get shot.
I mean, basically, yeah. Sometimes they spawn out of scripted events or whatever, but for the most part, yeah, it's just dino men with alien guns running around, and then when they see you, they go, rah, and, like, try to shoot at you. So you shoot them first because you cheated and have all of the guns.
I actually like this one a little bit better than the first one with regards to what enemies they have in there, because the first one to me, granted, I wasn't a huge reader of the comics beforehand. It just seemed like somebody thought, hey, what's the craziest enemies we can think of knowing that we can get away with anything? This one, you've mostly got the dinosaur Primogen guys. So everything is more cohesive in there with who the enemies are. So I just think it works a lot better.
Yeah, and they try to... the levels are themed a little bit. There's like 6 or 7 levels. And they're all themed a little bit. So like there's the River of Souls where you fight zombies and dinosaur men, and there's a level where you fought a bunch of gorilla-like things and dinosaur men. And the dinosaur men are kind of the consistent main bad guys throughout the whole thing. They're varying levels of humanoid and dinosaur mixed.
But you can't forget that Acclaim, from the beginning, was looking at this as a franchise. So that big scary guy that's trapped in the lightship, it's Oblivion.
Whoa.
And not just the concept, it's a guy named Oblivion.
It's just a dude of nothingness.
And when you beat the game, you realize that there's still some traces of Oblivion out there and leads you right into Turok 3.
Turok 3, Shadow of Oblivion.
And I just think that's really cool, because in comics all the time, you have... here's this thing that happened, here's this guy that you thought died, not really coming back, foreshadowing for things all over the place, and I don't see it happening in games too much.
Yeah, it's, I think a lot of games think of themselves as a one-and-done, and then maybe begin to form a larger plot after the first game. I know, the Turok series kind of did the same thing. I don't think anybody expected the first Turok to be the hit that it was until it got shown at E3, and they literally changed over their entire booth's marketing because Turok was overshadowing whatever they thought was going to be the hit.
I can't even remember what it was. I'm sure that Patrick told us the first time we looked at Turok games, so I'll go back and listen to that one and see.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was either. It definitely wasn't Turok.
And it definitely wasn't something that was like, this would have been amazing if it wasn't compared to Turok. It was just some run-of-the-mill thing.
Oh, yeah, it was not a name that I remember fondly. How about that?
Let's go with that.
So, one of the big draws of the Turok games at the time is the incredibly ridiculous guns. There are a lot of guns in this game. Just many. And they range from your standard pistol to a bow and arrow to a bow that shoots exploding arrows. You got kind of the standard first-person shooter basics of pistol, shotgun, I guess bow, even if the bow trend didn't really pick up until a few years ago. And, like, a sniper rifle equivalent. But then you get, oh, you've got a rocket launcher, except the rocket launcher is burst fire and always fires in bursts of three rockets because there is no kill like overkill. But then you've got things like a gun that lays plasma mines. I never really found a use for it because there's... I at least never encountered a point in the game where I had some amount of time to lay mines and then lure bad guys into trap, which I think was what that was supposed to do. I don't really know. But you also get the Talon, which is your knife equivalent, which is a couple of dinosaur claws, like, tied to your hand that you use when you run out of ammo and you just kind of slash at people.
I mean, let's just call it what it is. It's a Wolverine thing.
Oh, yeah. And then it gets upgraded to the Warblade, which is, like, the same thing but metal, which I think is clearly an upgrade. I don't really understand why you didn't just get something metal in the first place. But then you get, like, crazy stuff, like a taser that doesn't actually do any damage, but when you hit someone with it, they get locked in place with this really cool lightning effect on them. So you can, like, if you're out of... And it has unlimited ammo, so if you're out of ammo, you can just, like, tase people and run. That was pretty cool. There's the aforementioned razor blade boomerang thing, which is just the classic fantasy trope. That one's all right. It seems to do appreciable amounts of damage, have reasonable range, hit things on both the throwing out and the coming back, because it's a boomerang, because of course it is, and have unlimited ammo, which is good because you will run out of ammo a lot in this game. Or at least I did, because I couldn't hit the broadside of a barn and kept dying. The one that got all of the press and controversy at the time was the Cerebral Boar, which fires homing missiles that specifically lock onto things' heads, because don't think about it, it's Turok. And then, like, drill into the guy and then make them explode from the inside out. It's very gory in terms of 1998 N64 level gore, and the main reason why I was not allowed to play this as a child. I can also state with absolute certainty that the weapon is both stupidly overpowered and also borderline worthless. Because it seems to one-hit kill anything that it hits, but it can only hit if it locks onto things, and it doesn't always seem to lock onto things, especially when you or the target is moving and or they are close by, and enemies are frequently close by. So it was really good when things were not really threatening because they were over there, but it was not much help when there are velociraptors trying to eat your face.
But it just sounds so cool.
Oh yeah, you say the name and it's like, oh, that's the Cerebral Boar. Blah. My favorite weapon was the Shredder, because I am a sucker for anything that bounces off walls. Like, any game that gives you a gun that bounces off walls, that's like, that's the one I want. The upgraded rifle in Jak 2, the Ripper in Unreal Tournament, I use those even when they're bad because I like to watch things bounce. That's basically it. I use that a lot. I don't think it was the optimum tool, but I used it a lot.
I didn't get far enough to get any of the really cool ones.
I cheated and unlocked all guns.
The one cheat I refused to do was that unlock all the cool ones one.
Oh, that was the thing that I did. I didn't turn on invincibility. I went for all guns and unlimited ammo because I kept running out. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do anything, you know, give this game the review it deserves, I'm going to play with all the toys. And I did, and I concluded that the bouncy gun is the best.
Well, you heard it here first. Bouncy ball bombs. It's the way to go.
So, a little bit about the game's structure and levels. They're huge. Like, the game has 7 levels, I think, and they are big. Like, there's a lot of level. They're all built to be like a tangle of looping around, so you'll pass through the same areas a lot, but with different keys or doors open, and you'll find different paths through. And I really kind of appreciated that level design, even if it means that levels take a long time and you don't have many opportunities to save your game, because you can only do that at set points in a level, which are sometimes 15-20 minutes apart, at least at the rate I was playing the game.
Saving games back on 64 was weird anyway. So just the fact that they did it, I think, is really good.
Well, and this one is weird anyway, because it requires an N64 memory card. And I have a bunch of N64 games. Many of them have save functions. The only ones I know of that required the memory card, most of them didn't even support it, but the only ones I encountered that required it were Gauntlet Legends and Turok 2. I don't own the first one. Maybe the first one required it too.
The only reason I have the memory card was that it came in a controller that I picked up.
Oh, I specifically bought memory cards for Gauntlet Legends because I love Gauntlet, and there was no way in heck I was going to play that without being able to save.
So, compared to the Turok comics, as you know them, what does this game really get wrong?
I mean, it bears no resemblance to any of the eras of Turok I've actually read, outside of whoever is currently holding the title of Turok being an unstoppable badass. There's much more of an emphasis on, like, kind of the space stuff during the Acclaim era. They really looked at the, there's dinosaurs and aliens and everything mashed together in the Lost Lands, and really put their money on the aliens and the more futuristic spaceships and laser guns kind of aesthetic, with some dinosaurs sprinkled in, as opposed to what I read of the Valiant era and many of the other eras, which are mostly land that time forgot, dinosaurs, and whatever technology you can scavenge, combined with some sort of ancient aliens, weird pyramids that might be magic or might be lasers. But my understanding, and you know, from what you discussed earlier, is that the Acclaim era was very much about being in space and fighting aliens.
Yeah, what I've been able to see from them, it's a lot of space. It definitely has the dinosaur stuff in there. It really picks up on things. But the game doesn't have a lot of Turok in the real world. And, I mean, that's not a hugely significant portion of the Acclaim ones that I was able to see, but it's more than a couple panels. So that's really something I would have liked to have seen in the game, even if it is to be a cutscene at the beginning or the end.
Oh yeah, like him getting picked up from college by Aiden to go save the universe.
Yeah, it's not like you would have needed to do much. Just have something like that in there. Even if it was just Aiden saying, okay, I guess you're going to have to go back to your world now. That's at least acknowledging that that world exists.
Yeah, I agree with that. If you're going to, you know, give the character the backstory of, oh, he's mostly just a normal kid at college, but sometimes has to go save the world, you might want to at least acknowledge that in-game.
Then what do you think this game really gets right?
You feel like an unstoppable badass once you muddle through all of the control schemes and find one that you're similar at. You really do, like, you know, you're sneaking up on dinosaurs with the bow and arrow, and, you know, you're getting into fights with giant lizards and shooting your way through that. It's a lot of fun. Like, it's a lot of fun. It kind of captures that sort of Rambo tone that the Valiant comics had, even if it's much more in space than any of the other ones.
And that control scheme thing, too. I can't believe we didn't mention this at all yet while we were actually recording. They have remastered this game. So, I mean, you can get a pretty new PC port or Xbox One port or Switch port of it. And I can't imagine that they wouldn't have updated the controls for at least one of those.
I mean, honestly, I have been so tempted to get it on PC because I really enjoyed playing the game and I think I would be a lot better with a mouse. I think that would drastically improve my ability, but, you know, part of looking at this from a historical perspective, at least for me, was playing it on the N64 hardware because it really was one of the big games that really took advantage of that weird friggin' controller that the N64 had.
And not many games can say that they actually took advantage of that controller.
I had an argument with a buddy. He was like, man, the N64 controller is like the worst controller ever made. It's so bad for basically everything. Like, you can't do a first-person shooter on it. And I'm like, dude, no. Man, it was the controller for first-person shooters, like, right up until Halo happened, and control schemes changed radically. Like, it was the place to be for that, because imagine playing it on a PlayStation 1 controller. How are you going to do that? Just at all? You're not gonna. There's not enough buttons, and they're not in the places you need them to be. The N64 controller was a brilliant innovation, and I wish those joysticks didn't just die all the time.
And finally, if you've got somebody who wants to get into the Turok comics, would you hand them this game as a bit of a primer course?
I mean, no, but I'd still hand the game to basically anyone anyway. You like first-person shooters? Dude, try this out.
See, that's where I'm caught up on this one. Just ignoring the first-person shooter love or not that somebody has. This has a pretty basic storyline going in it that's explained really well, and there's not a lot of guessing what you need to do, so you just get to go in and experience the game.
Yeah, it is a great game. The only thing that doesn't necessarily make it a great primer for the comics is it's entirely the Acclaim era, and that's fine, because Acclaim was really pushing the synergy between the games and the comics at the time, and everything really matched up. But it's nearly impossible to find the comics that this would be a good primer to these days. You know, I don't know that they sold well, and I haven't been able to find them.
I mean, there's a reason why I had to go to the methods that I did to find them.
Yeah, I mean, if you gave this game to somebody and then handed them the Dynamite Turoks off of the shelf, they would be confused as heck until the end of that 2019 series when they go, hey, isn't that the guy?
I think this one needs to be chalked up into, if you happen to have the Acclaim ones, it's great. But don't trust that somebody you give the game to will ever be able to find them.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I kind of grew up in a comic shop, and the Acclaim comics were just, they were a flash in the pan. It was like the 2 or 3 years that these comics were coming out, and I don't have any recollection of seeing them.
In all my years of going to the flea market, in all the times I've stopped at the comic shops here, whether it be actually looking for something or just wasting time when I needed to be somewhere else, I don't think I've ever seen an Acclaim published comic in real life.
I didn't even realize they existed. I mean, I came to Turok kind of late. The games were already out before I got into my dad's collection of the Valiant books. So I was surprised to find that there were comic books based on the games, and then I checked the dates and went, oh! Turns out, comics came first.
Yeah, finding those things for the show has been really fun.
And the, like, the Acclaim era was so brief, because it was right as Acclaim went boom-bust. And, yeah.
So, Billy, it's been great having you on. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
Well, I wrote occasionally and would like to get back to once I develop time for CommanderCast.com. And like every late 20s, early 30s white male, I'm looking at maybe starting up a podcast, but we'll see how that goes.
I've heard a preview for it. It'll be good. You just need to make it happen.
Yeah, as ever, time is the enemy of all.
Yep, that's why I only have one podcast right now and not, like, five.
Yeah. Also, I'd like to say, before we sign off, I would like to just remind the universe that the early Turok comics refer to the dinosaurs as honkers, because they didn't have the word dinosaur when they first encountered them in, like, 1870 or whenever they were supposed to wander into Lost Valley. They just named them after their sounds. So, remember, dinosaurs are honkers.
That's a thing you are never going to be able to forget. As always, if you want to hear more from me, you can head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast, or just the Play Comics website, which has links to all of our social medias. It also has links to a merch store and other ways to support the show if you like what I'm doing well enough to maybe give me money so that my wife doesn't threaten to make me stop doing it. She's not really doing that, but you can pretend that's what helps you feel better about supporting the show. Also, don't forget that Play Comics is part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to such wonderful shows as Better Podcasting, which is a show about podcasting, hence the name, where you can learn to make yourself a good podcast, or a better podcast if you have a good one already. And if you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of right now, you can head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics that may or may not actually go with the game you grabbed, despite the titles on there, and go find yourself a new favorite character.
Whoa.
Then I'll figure out what I'm gonna use.
It's promo time. We're here to promote other shows.